2023 to order. The time is 7 p.m. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on January 9th, 2023. Notice was sent to two newspapers designated by the board, the Express Times and Hunter Den Review. Notices were posted on the district website, the main bulletin board in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school. Notice was sent to the municipal clerk of Clinton Township. Please note that this meeting will be live streamed. Attendance, please, Dr. Dempsey.
Dr. Blumenfeld?
Here.
Ms. Creighton?
Here.
Ms. Emery?
Present.
Mr. Hornick?
Here.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Present.
Ms. Oliver?
Here.
Mr. Rosa?
Here.
Dr. Iamaki?
Here.
Ms. Brennan?
Present.
All here.
Thank you. Ms. Oliver, could you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Good evening and welcome to our regular meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education. Thank you to all who have taken the time out to attend our meeting. And now for the Board President's report. I'm not quite sure how we got to the middle of October, but here we are. This time of year is always a bit rushed. Personally, I always feel like I'm on a roller coaster from the time school starts until we get to the new year. Now that the dust has settled from the beginning of the year, we still have a lot going on. The PTA just finished their book fairs, and we also have class parties starting, as well as other holiday events. September was National Teachers Month, and October is National Principals Month. The purpose of these months is to honor the dedication and hard work of our teachers and principals and to show appreciation for their contributions to the success of our students, schools, and communities. We thank all our wonderful teachers, principals, and vice principals for all their hard work and dedication to our district. Next week, board members from across the state, including Clinton Township, will be attending NJSBA's annual workshop in Atlantic City. We attend this event for quality professional development, including getting important legal, legislative, policy, and funding updates, finding out about new products and services, hearing from districts around the state about their challenges and innovations, and celebrating the magic of public education. Board members, you should have seen a spreadsheet in your email for logging which session you plan to attend so that we can make sure we have good coverage of topics. And I believe Dr. Dempsey also sent an additional email this earlier today. In November, parent-teacher conferences will be held. CTMS will be going about that a little bit differently, but I will let Dr. Steger speak to that in her report. November 7th is Election Day. I encourage all who are eligible to get out and vote. We will also have two questions on the ballot for school resource officers. If you need additional information about that, there will be an information meeting this Wednesday here in the auditorium at 6 p.m. There are a few more events happening in our district between now and our next meeting. We have pumpkin carving, trunk or treat, fall parties, clothing drive, PTA diversity night, first grade songs and poems, and choral and instrumental concerts at CTMS, and so many things to look forward to. Since our next meeting will be in December, I would like to wish everyone a wonderful rest of fall as well as a happy Thanksgiving. Lastly, this evening, our student representatives will share updates from the district. I'd like to welcome our new representative, Ms. Abigail Jenkin. And board members, we're gonna pretty much move out for all of our presentations now and then let them present.
Hello, good evening. My name is Abby Jenkin, and I will be taking the place of Sienna due to her scheduling conflict. I am an eighth grade student. I've been very involved in CTMS, and I'm honored to be chosen as one of the student representatives. I've been given so many great opportunities this school year, and I can't wait to see what this year holds for me as a student and as a representative.
Good evening. My name is Justin Smith. This is my third meeting as a student representative.
This has been a very busy month for me because of cross country that is going on right now. We have 42 kids on the team this year, and it has been a fun and challenging season. We set personal goals and work hard to beat our own records, and the Meet of Champions is coming up soon.
Last Friday night, you may have heard about our first ever Parents' Night Out held at CTMS. Both Justin and I were involved in the committee, planning out activities for the younger children of the school district.
This was a fundraiser to help raise money for the 8th grade trips this year. We've raised over $1,800. The money will be used for our year-end graduation activities.
Parents paid to drop off their kids, children from kindergarten to 5th grade. The 8th graders took care of these kids and entertained them with fun games and activities.
Coming up in November, we have drama club auditions, and we'll be performing the musical The Little Mermaid. We hope that you will all come to the performance.
The CTMS news crew is growing, with 83 student hosts and 30 editors. The daily announcements are filmed by the hosts, and the editors edit after school. The news is presented to the whole school every morning during homeroom. Last year, I received the Most Valuable Anchor, or MVA, award for the school news, and I'm an editor, too.
As student representatives, we hope to give you insight about what is happening in our school from the perspective of a student.
We are so happy to be included in the planning and programming for the CTSD schools. Please let us know if there's anything specific you would like us to report on.
In December, you can look forward to a movie that we are preparing called A Day in the Life of a CTMS Student. Does anyone have any questions, comments, or requests for us tonight? You? Yes, we're pretty sure, yeah, in December. Oh, it was. I personally love getting to talk with the little kids and to play with them. It was so much fun.
I enjoyed. I was in charge of the music and movement rotation group thing. So, for every single rotation, it was really fun, but also really tiring getting these kindergarteners and second graders to start dancing like zombies and doing the monster mash dance. But other than that, I think it was a great experience and a wonderful opportunity, and I can't thank Ms. Canigallo enough for that. That was awesome. Just that whole entire thing was great.
Thank you. Now you can hear me. Good evening, everyone. My name is Melissa Goad. I'm the principal at Patrick McGarren School, and I am also our district's anti-bullying coordinator. So this evening, I'm putting on my anti-bullying coordinator hat. I'll be speaking with you about all things HIB in Clinton Township. I'm going to do a brief overview and training for our board members, and I'm so pleased to see community members here as well, that I can share the information with you. I'll then be talking about our SSDS reporting requirements as well as our HIB grade report. So I'm sharing information with you tonight that was originally presented by NJPSA, which is a professional organization. It was originally presented by David Nash, who is normally here doing this presentation for you, along with John Worthington. I have to do his regular disclaimer that this presentation is just a summary. It is not intended to replace legal advice. So tonight I'm going to go over just some general information about harassment, intimidation, and bullying. First, I'd like to reshare the definition. Most of this is not new information, it's just a review of what you have learned before. I will end the presentation with just some information about recent changes to legislation and what that looks like in Clinton Township. So just as a reminder, it's often challenging when we're working through situations within a school. The intent of this legislation is very serious. There is a link, unfortunately, to harassment, intimidation, bullying, and suicide of young people. And that is something that is taken very seriously that we're looking at to make sure that we are doing everything possible, and not just meeting the requirements, but exceeding the requirements and providing a safe environment for our children. So when we're talking about harassment, intimidation, bullying, what I'm going to be talking about this evening is the legal definition in the state of New Jersey. It sometimes can be difficult because what you may know to be bullying from a children's cartoon or from a TV show, or even maybe from some of our experiences as children who are now adults, there's what can be defined as bullying behavior, but there's also the definition of bullying in the state of New Jersey, that's our criteria for when we're investigating and determining whether or not something is harassment, intimidation, or bullying. We're looking very carefully at this definition. And I want to be really clear at the beginning to say, just because something may not end up being classified as bullying per the definition, that's not to say that we won't still take swift and sustaining action in supporting our children and applying code of conduct violation situation and information. There's a lot of IONs at the end. We take things very seriously, even if it doesn't meet the definition. So as a reminder, harassment, intimidation, bullying defined can include any gestures, written, verbal, or physical acts, and electronic communication. It may be one incident or a series of incidents, and it takes place on school property, school-sponsored functions, on a school bus, or off school grounds. So I like to say basically anywhere. This is the really important component of the definition. The behavior, the gesture has to be perceived as being motivated by an actual or perceived characteristic. So it can be one of the protected classes, but it could also be any other distinguishing characteristic that can be identified through the course of the investigation. And some case law shows that other distinguishing characteristics may be vegetarianism, lice, being quiet, being the new student, having a situation happening with your parents. So it's really important, though, if you're looking at and considering an other distinguishing characteristic, that we have evidence to support that. You can't just say it's something else. We really have to dig into it and determine what that might be. And again, so that behavior is motivated by this distinguishing characteristic. That's the first part. The second part is that there has to be substantial disruption to the child's school day. And that's a tricky part because it's hard to define substantial disruption. What may be a substantial disruption for one child may not be a substantial disruption for another child. And that's why it's really important that as we're conducting these investigations, that we have staff members who really know our children and are really invested in understanding what's happening for them, so that we can really figure out some of these nuances. It does need to be something that is more than a momentary annoyance. So something may be disruptive in the moment, but it's not something that's pervasive or ongoing for it to be considered a substantial disruption. And this is something that the anti-bullying specialists and the principals really spend a lot of time talking through so that we're making sure that we're really understanding what's happening for our children. So there has to be a distinguishing characteristic, there has to be substantial disruption, and the third component is that there has to be one of the three of these areas. So the act has to have the effect of or create reasonable fear of physical or emotional harm to the student or damage to their property. It has the effect of insulting or demeaning any student, or it creates a hostile educational environment by interfering with the student's education. So as we look at that definition of harassment, intimidation, bullying, we're always looking at those three prongs, and we're really working to define whether something is bullying per the definition or if it's conflict. Conflict happens all the time in schools. We deal with this on a regular basis. I'm not saying that that's appropriate, but it is a part of what we work with young children, all the way from preschool up through eighth grade. So during a conflict, sometimes that conduct can look like it's bullying. However, conflict and bullying are very different. In a conflict, the people who are involved are equally involved in the disagreement. It's considered to be mutual, whereas when we're looking at something that ends up being defined as bullying, it's typically one-sided. It doesn't always have to be, but that's what it typically is. Again, I talked before, but it's hard to define sometimes because different children are impacted in different ways, but there's case law that says that even if the target is resilient, the behavior may not end up being defined as HIB. So something to think about, what HIB is not. I just told you what it is in the state of New Jersey, but what it's not, it's never adult versus adult. HIB is always in a school, it's always with the child as the alleged victim. It also would never be a student aggressor with an adult victim. Those would be other courses that we might follow for addressing such a situation. However, HIB may exist if it's student versus student, or if we have a student victim with an adult aggressor. And we're always very careful about involving our affirmative action officer as needed, and if the above situations occur, or really looking carefully at code of conduct violations. This is also not new information, but in the state of New Jersey, we are required to report bias-related acts and any suspected link to any HIB behaviors, and we report those to the county prosecutor's office and local law enforcement. So I mentioned at the beginning that there have been some changes to legislation, and I did go over those in a previous presentation to everyone, but there is, under Chapter 338, some new revisions to this law, and these were signed into effect last year in January. As a quick overview, it impacts some of our parental rights and responsibilities. Like, for example, I know we shared previously that if there is a founded HIB and it can be proven that there was a potential neglect of supervision at home, there are other ranges of responses that either a court can take or that we as a district can look at in terms of supporting our families moving forward. There is a state-level position that was created. There are a lot of requirements for what we need to post on our website in terms of information for families to access. These are some of the examples of the potential for parents or guardians to be fined for multiple offenses if it can be proven that there was a lack of supervision. And being liable if there's in civil action as well. We are a district that in our policy does have preliminary determination, so there's heightened scrutiny and review of that, including a report to the state now this year in our SSDS reporting. And there are also parameters that we follow as a school when we are responding to acts of founded HIBs. There are requirements for first, second, and then subsequent acts of HIB if it is founded by a particular student. There is a new Department of Ed document, it's not new yet. There is a current version of our Department of Ed document, Guidance for Parents on the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights, that is required to be posted on our website through this new legislation. And I mentioned earlier that there's a new School Climate State Coordinator position at the Department of Ed. Another new requirement is that there is a form called the 338 form that we as a district are required to use. So there are two forms. There's one for families and people outside of our school to use if you're reporting an incident of HIB. And there is a form that our staff are required to use as well, following the same guidelines for submitting their written report. So those are also on our website. And just a quick reminder, it's really our goal. It's really challenging when we're working with HIB situations to ensure, it's very important that we're communicating with everyone who's involved with this, but it's challenging at the beginning sometimes if we get a report, but we may not have all of the information yet. We are required to notify parents right away if their child is a potential either victim or aggressor within an HIB. Sometimes at the very beginning, we don't have much information other than something was reported. So we work really carefully to communicate with our families throughout the process and explain the investigation process. We also talk again at the end to share what we learned and what we need to do moving forward. So those are pieces that we continue to work with. It's important to note that we typically do not permit parents to be a part of the investigation process when that's happening. Oftentimes it's just because we're working so quickly to address it that the interviews happen pretty quickly, but we do not permit our parents to be present during those investigations. And again, just a reminder, the process, once we learn about a situation that may have occurred, if it's reported, the principal lets the parent know about what occurred. We let the parents know whether the child was the alleged victim or the alleged aggressor. If we know what it is at that time, we would share what the actual or perceived characteristic may have been that motivated the behavior. And then we just share other information as needed on a case-by-case basis with the goal of protecting our students' safety. We share with parents the process, and again, sometimes we don't know everything at the very beginning, but we will certainly share what we're able to when the investigation is concluded. The investigation is concluded within 10 days. It's shared with the superintendent, and then it's presented at the next regularly scheduled board meeting. After the board meeting, we then provide written notice to families of the outcome of the investigation, whether or not it was founded, whether or not discipline was imposed. Parents, we do not share the details of what the specific discipline was outside of the person whose child was being disciplined. And then there's due process rights or rights for hearings within the timeframes that are established by the Department of Ed. So again, I mentioned that there were just some general takeaways of the changes in legislation over the recent changes. Again, it's really important as we're looking through investigations, in order for it to be defined as harassment, intimidation, or bullying in the state of New Jersey, it does have to meet those three elements of the definition that we discussed at the beginning. Not all inappropriate behavior on the part of children ends up being defined as HIB. However, anytime there's something that we're working with, we take it very seriously, and it's not to minimize. If it doesn't meet the HIB criteria, we still take it very seriously and provide supports to all the children involved. When we're working with our little ones, too, it's really important to look at the intention of causing harm isn't required. We're really looking at whether a reasonable person should know that there will be a harmful effect. And again, that's important when we're talking about the age of children, too. This is legislation that applies for kids all the way from kindergarten up through high school. So something that happens in kindergarten is very different than something that happens in high school. And we're cognizant of that. And again, our anti-bullying specialists and our building principals really work very diligently to make sure that we're supporting all parties who are involved. That is the end of my HIB training. Are there any questions about that? I'll be here for a little bit longer too, so if you think of a good one, you can ask me. Okay, and the next part that I'm going to share with you this evening is our district reporting requirements to the state for student safety data system and also for our grading self-assessment. And when I was here on my anniversary in June, I think it was, I was sharing with you all, no special events tonight other than Boss's Day, thank you, Dr. Steger. I was sharing with you that in terms of reporting to the state, there are two reporting periods that encompass the full year. So with HIB, we're always looking back to the year before when we're doing our reporting. So this presentation tonight is for the reporting period two, which I actually put the wrong dates in there. I apologize, it's correct on the other slide. So we're reporting from January through June of the end of the year last year. So just a reminder, this hasn't changed from my last presentation. The student safety data system collects two types of information throughout the district. We're looking at any incidents of violence, vandalism, harassment, intimidation, or bullying. It includes weapons offenses, substance offenses, restraint and seclusion, and any other incidents that may lead to student removal. It also collects information on HIB trainings and programs in order to fill the state and federal reporting requirements that we collect throughout the year. So this is the same as what I shared with you the last time. This just shares the second reporting period was January 1st through June 30th of 2023. The first part of this report, so with the SSDS, I share it after it's submitted to the state. For the other report I do, I submit it before, I share with you before I submit it to the state. So this information has already been submitted for our district, and I'm just sharing it with you this evening. And again, this is the same as I shared last time too. This reviews what specific incidents are reported in SSDS. There are different incident categories that things get placed into. This is really hard for you to see, but the information is there. Basically, for reporting period two, this breaks it down. So the top part up here, if you can see, this is all what I shared with you last time. This is report period one. This is report period two. So you can review the details. We had, and for a total for the school year, I'll go over that with you. We had a total of 21 incidents for our district. 5 were violence related, 0 vandalism related. There were 2 substance incidents, there were 0 weapons incidents, and there were 14 HIV confirmed and 32 incidents leading to removal. And we had a total of 38 alleged harassment, intimidation, bullying incidents. The other part of this report includes the HIV trainings and programs that we had in place throughout the course of the school year. And this is also a summary of the entire last year. I previously shared with you information for report period 1. In our district, a lot of our training happens at the beginning of the school year. As we come back to school, we're training our staff, we're reviewing with students. But this would also encompass other events and trainings that happened throughout the course of the year. So there were not a lot more that were added in report period 2. But again, we had a total of 24 trainings and 32 programs in place that addressed harassment, intimidation, and bullying within our district. And you'll see the next report that I'm going to share with you is the self-assessment. And even though we have a lot of trainings and supports that are in place, that's always an area that we think that we can do more as well, and you will see that within our scoring. So this is the school's self-assessment to determine grades under the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights Act. And again, just a reminder, this is a requirement for each school, each public school, to grade our efforts to implement the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights Act. Each of our schools, as a requirement of the legislation, has a school safety climate team. And it's our job to take a look back at what happened the year prior within our schools so that we can not only prepare this report, but more importantly, reflect on what we're doing for our children in the school and ensure that we have appropriate measures in place, both in prevention and in response to situations. So again, the same as last year, this assessment has not changed. There are the 8 core components that we take a look at. It's the climate team in each building that actually completes this assessment. We get together in a room and really go over the rubrics that are provided by the state. We review the sample documentation and compile our own to end up scoring ourselves on this self-assessment. So just as a reminder what happens moving forward, this report is due to the state by October 30th. They then review the data. They issue grade reports sometime in the spring. And then in the spring, you'll be notified that we've received our final grade report based upon what we're submitting now. And then we have 10 days to post that on the website after we receive it. So the areas that we take a look at for the self-assessment are our programs, 1, our training is 2, training on HIV policy is 2, 3 is other staff instruction and training, 4 is our curriculum and instruction related to HIV, 5 is HIV personnel, 6 is our school level incident reporting procedures, 7 is our investigation procedures, and 8 is the HIV reporting. There are 4 rating categories. 0 means that you don't meet the requirements, 1 is partially meets, 2 is meets, and 3 is exceeds. So we go through the rubrics and gather our documentation, and in Clinton Township, we meet all of the requirements and we exceed most of the requirements as well. So you can see here that some of the areas as we compare were pretty consistent across the district, and we work very closely together across our schools. Our district average is a 74 out of 78 in our ratings of all those elements that we just discussed. And some of the areas that we did tend to score ourselves a little bit lower are just as we're continuing to monitor what trainings and programs we're providing to our students and what trainings we have available for our staff and for our contracted service providers. This is fairly consistent with how we do each year, and we're constantly revising and evaluating what we have in place for our children so that we can ensure a safe and positive environment for them. That's the end of my presentation for both all 3 HIV training and both of the reports that I'll be submitting to the state. Well, one's already submitted, one I'll be doing at the end of the month. Any questions, Dr. Uhimaki? Yes, so there's, within each school, we follow the New Jersey State Bar Foundation Bully Busting curriculum, which is woven into our curriculum, and it's also lessons that we teach. So some are woven in and some are very specific. So we teach the children at different age levels different positive behaviors that they might have. For example, we teach about tattling versus telling at the primary level. We teach children that if there's something that they see that's happening that doesn't make them feel safe or comfortable, that their role is to let an adult know that they're not tattling on someone, that they're telling an adult when they need help. So that's one of the areas that is provided to children throughout. What we really focus on with HIV is that while an assembly in and of itself is not the best form of continuous instruction, there are some pieces that we may bring in. For example, we have Dr. Mikey Fallon who comes in and presents at our middle school, and that is also a program that might be provided to our children in form of an assembly. So, thanks. Yes, Dr. Blumenfeld. The way that the state, there's restraints and seclusions that I know we spoke about last time too, and that can be removal. Those are supports, not necessarily removal, those are supports that we would provide to students through a process that's very clearly defined within our school. Some of them might be removals from the school. That's not something that we have happen a lot here either, so. Yes, Ms. Creighton. That's a great question. And that's actually something that ties really nicely into our strategic planning work as well. We do some, a lot of it is just through our work with the children in the classroom. We're not currently using a lot of surveys, although that's something that we are looking to really capture a little bit more of moving forward. We can tell from our interactions with children and the supports that we're providing that they are learning the material, but that's one of the pieces we want to really dig into a little bit more to ensure that they're really having the takeaways that we want them to have. That's a great question. It's a work in progress. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a great evening. Thank you.
Evening, everyone. Carl Blanchard, Director of Curriculum. Here to speak about 2023 NJSLA results. This is the second year now since COVID we've given the kids this assessment. It addresses specifically ELA and math grades 3 through 8 and science in grades 5 and 8. Bottom line up front here, you can see on the top left, we have our ELA results. This is in comparison to the state performance over the last 4 years. The red line denotes where we had COVID. You can see there's a drop in score in 2021-22. And then that has, we've sort of plateaued, honestly, in 22-23 at 63%. Proficiency. What that means is that 63% of our students are proficient or advanced proficient in ELA, so they're meeting expectations, and that obviously means that the remainder are not meeting expectations. When you look at the middle chart, we're seeing math. In math, we see a bigger decrease after COVID and a slight uptick in the last year. In science, you can see there's a healthier rebound. There's something to be said about the science, that the assessment for science is, and the standards for science, new to everyone. This performance that we see, this is statewide. This is not great proficiency overall, right? And we're seeing the same thing track here in Clinton. This is something, each of these things where we see, you know, progress that is not what we wanna see, we're gonna address that and are addressing it. I'll speak towards that to that towards the end of this presentation. So let's dig in here. There's a lot going on here, so I'm gonna just take a little bit of time to explain what this means. Because when you look at these numbers, it looks like, wow, this isn't, we're flat in ELA and math, but it's actually not a story of flatness across every grade. And so when you look actually in more detail, you can see areas of really strong performance and then areas where maybe the performance could be better. On average, that sort of evens out, right? So if you look, I don't know if this laser pointer is gonna work, but. So Let's look at third grade, ELA, so that's our English. In 2022, our proficiency rate was 40.2% right after COVID. In 2023, last year, our performance actually was lower in ELA in third grade. So what that means is the grade level change from 22 to 23, a different set of students, is down 3.5 points. When you look at grade four, there's some more information. So in 22, 63%, and that dropped in 23 to 52.6%, a drop of 10.7%. But when you actually look at the students who were in that cohort, so these kids who scored 52.6% last year, they scored 40.2% the prior year. That means that their improvement on this standardized assessment, obviously different standards, but this is performance on the state assessment, is up 12.4 points. Looking at this one, grade five, you can see that there is improvement over year of 6.2%. And that cohort of students who were fifth graders this spring, this last spring, and who were fourth graders the prior year, increased by 12.1%. So you can see the pattern here, right? Where it's green, this is showing either a year-on-year increase or a cohort increase. And where it's red, you're seeing a decrease, either year-on-year or by cohort. So there are areas here that I've highlighted in red that I'm gonna point out at the end just to sort of summarize. These are areas that we should look at and say, okay, this is working well. And obviously there are areas that are red where we need to devote our attention to and make sure we have some interventions in order to address these issues. This is the same story for math. So what we can see here, a nice uptick year on year in math, third grade, fourth grade doesn't look as healthy, fifth grade, as in ELA, looks quite healthy, and then through middle school. I think worth noting here that our algebra scores, so you see sometimes the scores for math. Math 8 is an assessment that's taken by all students who are not taking our accelerated algebra class, right? And so the population has been reduced in terms of the strength of the student. They're all taking algebra. You can see the strength of the algebra students here. So Ms. Kiefer's in the back. This should be a nice little shout out here for you. But you have 27 students taking this assessment last year, and all of them met proficiency. In fact, when you look at this compared to the state, this is way above state average, even though it's you know, a group of students who are accelerated and all taking the same assessment. So it's worth noting that in Math 8, those scores difficult to assess to some degree because we've had a change in who was taking that assessment. But regardless, that's just a little nuance here in the data. In science, we've seen an uptick over the past year. Regardless, it's not a, you know, not good enough. The fact that we have less than 50% proficiency in science needs addressing. So when you look at our performance versus state performance, in general, as is generally the case and historically has been the case in Clinton, the performance has been much better than state average, and it should be. There's a notable exception here in this data here, where in fourth grade we actually, sorry, in third grade, we actually scored below state average. This is something, this is a concern, right? And so you'll hear me address this at the end of this presentation. We'll look at math, similar. And again, in fourth grade, in math, below state average. Not acceptable, right? We've got to do something about this and are working hard to address it. And here you see the algebra score, which is pretty significant. So good job to our eighth grade math teacher. Science above state average again, but again, less than 50% is not where we should be. So when we look at the subgroups, something to bear in mind here when we look at subgroups is the size of population. We have to, we report on all groups that have more than 10 students. Fewer than 10 students, if you see a blank here, it's the population's too small, and so it's possible to be able to identify the student if the sample set is too small. And the sample set for our student subgroups, particularly with the, say, Black, African American, Hispanic, Latino populations are so small that it's difficult to draw any sort of conclusions. It's a very volatile score. But what we can see here is if we look at our students with IEPs compared to the general population, it's low, right? And so that's something that we're seeking to address, and that gap between our students who are getting individualized education plans and those who aren't, trying to reduce that gap. In mathematics, similar sort of story. And then in science, see the numbers here. I mean, it's the pattern is all the subgroups have gone up, but the science scores all went up as well. It's not a surprise that you would see this sort of pattern. And this is our access for ELL. So this is the assessment that our students who are taking, who are English language learners, take every year. Some highlights. So you've seen, I think you probably made your own conclusions about where we're doing well, but here are some highlights. One per grade, there are more per grade, but I just chose one per grade because it seemed equitable. So we have third grade in 2023, up 13 points in math. Fourth grade cohort, 12 points in ELA. The fifth grade cohort, so this is how they did this year compared to how they did last year. Those particular students, 16 points in math and 12 points in ELA. In sixth grade class is up 14 points in ELA. Seventh grade cohort, 11 points in ELA. Eighth grade, 19 points in math. And science proficiency up 13 points overall. But you can't, this is nice to see, right? And there are, I've been here 6-7 months. I've been universally impressed by our teachers and how hard they work and what they're doing for our kids. They are working very hard to help our kids learn, right? And I see that in every classroom I go into. This is an impressive district from that point of view, I think. But the reality is, when we look at proficiency of our kids on these, this is not the only assessment, right? There are other factors we have to measure. We have our own benchmarks, and there are other aspects that we look at when we're thinking about wanting to produce, children who are flourishing and become productive citizens. But this is about the NJSLA and, what can we do regarding, about these scores and what are the areas of concern? So, top to bottom here. So the gap between special ed and general ed is big, okay? Something we're doing as a district is looking at ways to provide strategies which allow teachers and then the students to succeed in the classroom without having a special intervention. And it's using data to make smart instructional decisions so that all students, regardless of where they're actually, what their level is, to have their needs met, right? And so this is, so you've seen Dr. Steger's letters about the New Jersey tiered system of supports, as a board, that the goal, our primary goal for the district is our tier one strategies that we're using. And this is exactly what we're talking about here. This really seeks not just to, it seeks to address all students, but particularly those kids that have, struggles in the classroom. And I think this is one way that we can really begin to bridge that gap. The other piece is we have specialists, literacy support teachers and math support teachers. We've just got to think about how we're using those staff as deliberately and strategically as possible, right? And so there's a lot of work that's going into this in terms of looking at our data, looking at what type of programs, you know, a programmatic method to allow us to use these staff as well as we possibly can. And that's ongoing. Drop in math scores after COVID took a bit of a tumble, right? 19 points. And we recovered 1 point over the past year. So you know that we've, a part of this is adopting a new math program, iReady. By all accounts, the iReady program, it seems, from what I can see, I just saw a class today, it was fabulous. I mean, the kids were engaged for 60 minutes. They were talking about math. They were not just doing, you know, plug and chug. They weren't just like, okay, this is how to solve this problem, practice this 10 times. It was actually, they were talking about the reasons why these two equations, even though they were different, would you would derive a similar answer from it. And they were talking with each other. They were finding different ways to approach a problem. And so I'm optimistic that once this ball starts rolling, K-5 through all classrooms, we're going to see an uptick in these scores. In addition, we're using iReady, the math program, in the middle school for our special ed kids and for those kids that we've identified as needing more assistance. And that's underway. The other thing is thinking about, you know, sometimes it's not enough in the classroom, right? And so there's a lot of, teachers are spending a lot of time at CTMS with Hawk time, using extensions time in our other buildings. But then there's tutoring as well. And we've applied for a grant, high impact tutoring grant. We're still waiting to hear from the state whether we got it, but cautiously optimistic that we will. And this is going to lead to some strategic tutoring at RVS and also at the middle school here, which will be a homegrown version of a tutoring program. Low ELA performance in third and fourth grade. I think we saw this in the data. This is, again, a priority. These are priorities, right? You can't have too many priorities because then nothing's a priority, right? So, but here we have, you know, curriculum program gaps. It's so important that we do address curriculum. We're taking, again, an approach which is moderate to, you know, revising our curriculums, because you just can't do everything at once. It sort of overwhelms, right? Our staff, and the expectations become too much. And so currently it's a new math program, piloting a science program. So we are looking, though, at these curricular gaps and figuring out, you know, what can we do here? And not, we see a result in third and fourth grade. That doesn't mean third and fourth grade is getting it wrong, right? Or, you know, the things are happening in third and fourth grade. This is beyond that, right? So the foundation, the reading that's necessary in order to provide a good base for students to perform at higher grade levels, that happens in K-2, right? And so we're looking at that. And we're looking at all of the sort of complexities here to make sure that we are addressing, you know, where these areas are programmatically and also curricularly. I think there's an opportunity here as well when we're thinking about informational text, which we see as a deficit in many areas. This is something that with the Common Core and now with the New Jersey Student Learning Standards, you know, it's like informational text is front and center in many cases, and our students are struggling with that. So there are ways that we can think about integrating curricula. So if we can think about science, kill two birds with one stone to some degree. If you have, if we're able to bring together science and some ELA standards, that helps with science, and it also helps with ELA and reading these nonfiction and informational texts. And then low science scores. We already mentioned that in terms of that integration. But piloting a program, OpenSciEd. So OpenSciEd is inquiry-based, very similar in terms of iReady about how we're expecting kids to interact and think about science. I mean, so impressed in the classrooms I've been into and the discussions that teachers are having about this program, and they're learning as well. It's like, it's not just, you know, it's amazing to see. They're like, wow, this really happens, and let's try this experiment. They're thinking about doing experiments themselves, and they have questionings and wonderings themselves, right? Which is really, a wonderful thing for me as a sort of former science teacher to see. And the kids are getting that experience too, right? So I'm very optimistic here. I'm not just cautiously optimistic. I'm actually incautiously optimistic that the OpenSciEd program, if we roll it out well, I think is going to have a significant impact on how we do science. It's not the only thing, though, right? So we need to look at what's happening 6-8 in terms of science, and is OpenSciEd a good fit there? But then there's got to be time, right? We can do integration, and we can have some science happening in an ELA block, but ultimately, you know, kids need time to do these subjects, right? So. And that's one thing we really need to look at, is what our schedules mean for students and whether it's well balanced for the success overall of our kids. Thank you. Any questions, comments, or concerns? Yes, sir. Yeah, sure. It's a great question. So the question is about, are we, you know, lots of kids in algebra 100% proficiency, right? Proficient or advanced proficient. Are we, do we have too fine of, you know, a group? The placement process that our teachers use and that I've sort of approved, I think is a very strong one in terms of making sure that the students who are placed in algebra are going to be successful, right? At the same time, I would say, though, we're developing a system so we are looking at placement not just once. We're looking to do it in a way that, over the next year, to think about it, looking at it earlier to make sure that those kids who really do want to enter that program have a chance to sort of, you know, get it together and then qualify. And not only that, to say if kids really performing well in early eighth grade, I just met with the teachers today, in fact, about this, could they do well in algebra, and do we need to think about a placement for them? So there are a couple of checks and balances we're putting here to make sure that those kids are placed as appropriately as they should be. Dr. Imaki. Yeah, great question. I don't know the answer. I do know that when I asked a question similar to that a year or so ago, I got like crickets. I mean, they had no idea what I was talking about. So we don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't actually notice that pan until you just pointed it out, but that is interesting. Let's look at another one just for fun. So that's, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's math, right? I don't know what's going on. Right? I don't want to go off piece here too much, but I think the way we address math and how we go about it, it does create so much angst in kids, right? Math is always, when I was teaching, it was always math. And my kids, it's always math. That's the, and it shouldn't be. And Ms. Kiefer's like, she's like, no, it's not. You know, but there is something about the discipline which really kids find challenging, and then they have trouble catching up once they get behind because it's so structured and scaffolded. And so we've got to make sure that doesn't happen here and that we continue to grow. So. No doubt. Yeah. 100%. I do think, and I don't want to belabor I-ready, but I do think that the methodology that's used is so much more inclusive. It is not just about, you know, do you get it? No, okay, well let's try. It's, I'm not saying that's necessarily what all teachers are doing, but it's, there is this exploration of the concept of math. Just like in OpenSci, there's an exploration of the concept of science, which is different than I've seen in other programs, right? And so more inclusive to different types of learners and girls and boys, and they can have the discussion, right? So, I mean, it's early days, right? But again, I think we are on the right track here, but comments are, you know, 100%, I think, on point. Okay, thank you very much. Cusack. Do you want this?
No. So it'll be something I usually am not, which is brief. But you can just see from this board meeting today all of the things that a public school encompasses. We had, you know, harassment, intimidation, bullying, then we went to scores, and now we're going to CUSAC. And CUSAC is the way the Department of Education rates school districts, basically on all of the requirements in different areas. So this is gonna be quick. I'll talk about the process, and I'll tell you it's on the board agenda that we're going to be submitting our scores. So we started this last school year in 2023. A group of teachers, parents, board members, and educators and administrators got together to talk about the process, including central office people. We had document collection. Everything had to be collected by October 6th, and by document collection is for For instance, CUSAC will ask, did you submit your financial report on time? So we'll take a piece of the board agenda and we'll show that. Then we had the CUSAC committee review. I want to say thank you to the teachers, Noelle McCormick, Patty Carell, and the other teacher, now I'm drawing a blank, I'll get it. Lana Brennan was there as the board member representation. And Tracy Carew in the middle school. They sat there and we went through our scoring to see if they agreed. Then we're going to submit our preliminary scoring to the Department of Education. And then the next step is the department will come out, they'll walk through our buildings to make sure our physical plant is meeting the criteria. And then on April 16th, they'll come out and look at all of our documentation. So there are five areas that we are reviewed on. The DPRs are the indicators underneath of these areas. One is fiscal, one is governance, one is curriculum and instruction, or instruction and program as they call it. One is operations and one is fiscal. So when they score this, this is what we're going to be handing into the state. It's a binary scoring. So we either decide we have the evidence or we decide we don't have the evidence. And if we don't have the evidence, we do not get the points. So for example, for what's on the screen, the first one we would receive 1 point if we give ourselves a one. But on the second one we receive 3 points if we give ourselves a one. So it's a binary scoring system. So what I'm going to quickly share with you is what our DPR submission is going to be. The first one is instruction and program. 40% of that comes from our curriculum. All of our curriculum is intact. It meets all of the state requirements, but remember, compliance is not excellence, right? So it meets all the state requirements, so we gave ourselves 40 out of 40. Instruction and program is scored based on our test scores, and as you just saw from Mr. Blanchard, thank you for your presentation, and thank you, Melissa Goad. As you just saw from Mr. Blanchard, some of our test scores are not where we'd like them to be. So this might be the first time that Clinton Township might not get enough points to pass instruction and programming. So I just want to make that clear because that's not something this district has usually seen itself in. Fiscal management, a 92 out of 100. There was a couple of areas that, you know, through no fault, we missed documentation or we didn't have it, and it's a year look back, and we wanted to be honest with the process. Governance, we got a 93, same type of thing. Operations, 100. And personnel, it's something called a position control roster. It's all of the staff members who are in the district have to be properly certified and in the right spot. We have to have all of our scoring in the right spot. We have to make sure that teachers' professional development goals and SGOs and SGPs are all adequate. And so we missed one piece of that, so we have a 95 out of 100. So we're submitting that to the state, pending board approval. Does anyone have any questions? Ooh, the consequences. Dr. Blumenfeld just asked, what are the consequences of failing CUSAC? So the consequences of failing CUSAC are you get put on an improvement plan. The Department of Education comes out every 3 months or so. That documentation we talked about, we have to continue upload. We have to be available time-wise to be there with them. And it's just, you don't want to be a public school that doesn't pass CUSAC. It's not a good thing. Mrs. Kaltenbeck just asked if we failed instruction and programming and we passed the other ones, will they only come back for instruction and programming? Yes. Are you saying that you'll only settle for 100% in every area? So Mrs. Kaltenbeck asked, what plan do we have to address the areas where we're not 100%? We've already taken that into advisement. One of the areas is training the board on evaluating the superintendent. You know, so that's something that we're going to happen at the January board meeting. So we're looking at those areas and making sure that we address them moving forward. Another one was with our professional development goals. One of them is supposed to be based on feedback from the prior year. We're making sure that's happening for this year's goals.
Thank you.
So Mrs. Creighton just asked if we fail, how frequently they will come back, because it'll take some time to do some improvements. I want to be like Sandlot and be like forever, but no, no, it's not forever. Sorry. They come back until the scores are the place where they need to be, so it'd be our next NJSLA results. But as some of you know, I worked for the Department of Education, and I did CUSAC, and I actually monitored instruction and program. And there were three school districts in Somerset County that had failed instruction and programming. And it was just an incredible burden on them. And it took, you know, 3 or 4 years, and some of them still didn't break out of it. So it's not a good thing. So Dr. Riamaki said those targets that the state creates, when do they create them? Was it pre-COVID, and did it take into account the drop of scores that every district has experienced? It's interesting you say that. I'm not sure when they're created, to be honest with you. I do think some of it was based on pre-COVID data. However, last year was a CUSAC year, and many districts, because it's a 3-year cycle, so they switch different districts. Many districts did not pass instruction and program, which was an anomaly, some pretty high achieving districts. And the Department of Education adjusted their scoring, and they did actually end up passing, but I don't want to bank on that happening again. Any further questions? All right, back to the agenda.
Thank you, Mrs. Goad and Mr. Blanchard. We appreciate you coming. And now I will hand it over to Dr. Sager to do her superintendent's report.
Thank you. And thank you again to Mrs. Goad and to Mr. Blanchard for coming out and doing all that work to make everyone informed. I think the name of the game in my superintendent report is things in your locus of control. Things you can control and things you can't control. And, you know, as a superintendent, at the end of the day, everything stops with me. And that's sometimes hard when it's things you can't control. So I'm going to start off talking about preschool. It is still under embargo from the Department of Education. The Department of Education has not lifted the embargo saying we can share information or plan for preschool, and that is tied to funding. Districts have received notification, and they were told not to talk about it. However, I feel it's very important that we are ready to go with a strong preschool program in January, which is when we intended to start. So we have been doing some things behind the scenes. And again, we know all of this is pending lifting of the embargo and pending the PEA funding, but I would rather at the last minute say we're not moving forward than not be prepared to welcome students in January as we were meant to. So the other piece is for some current preschool half-day people, there's been some concerns. We're trying to be as responsive as possible, but again, in my control and what's not in my control, there are about 12 spots in each teacher's classroom. Currently, teachers have more than 12 students that they're seeing, so we're doing a lottery. We could just do it general. We could not be responsive to parents who'd like to keep their teacher. But we're trying to, you know, accommodate as best we can, but some people will be unhappy. So I'm just putting that out there. We don't want people to be unhappy, but at the end of the day, I think having full-day preschool free of charge to our community for 3- and 4-year-olds hopefully will outweigh the temporary inconvenience. Next, we're going to go into busing. At the beginning of the year, we quickly realized that we had 2 routes that were taking longer. Dr. Dempsey, who's our BA, and I spoke, and we decided that it was important that we added another bus run. Unfortunately, there are not drivers. There is a national, let alone a state shortage in bus drivers. There are some districts that have moved to getting rid of courtesy busing. That's if you live 2 miles from the school that you aren't bused, or you have to pay for busing. It's a dire situation. So there's a lot of feedback from these two buses that the children are in the bus for a very long time. I'm trying to answer the concerns. They are long. What's most upsetting, though, is that sometimes they're coming to school after the school day starts. Now, it's not as big of a deal in Round Valley and PMG as it would be in the middle school, because the middle school has periods and the teachers design it in a way to make sure that there's an entrance into learning, but we never want our students to be late to school. In fact, one of our policies specifically says how important it is to be on time. So the ESC is working with us. We met with them. We have a plan for moving forward. Part of the plan does involve reaching out to parents and asking them, if you're not riding the bus, are you willing to release your seat on the bus, knowing that you can always get it back this school year? And then once that information is done, there's a lot of other pieces. That's why bus routes are created over the summer, and it takes a long time. So I know some people are very unhappy, but again, going back to the locus of control, we do what we can when we can, and I would like it fixed probably just as much as everybody else, if not more so. The budget question we spoke about, there was a Q&A that came out this Friday for the community. There's some flyers that have been in the Clinton Township newsletter. The SRO will have an information session this Wednesday at 6 p.m. here in this auditorium. If people want to ask additional questions, there's also a chance to write in questions. If we get them, we'll try to address them. I don't have the cost in front of me, but it was all in the letter. It is an increase to the taxes, so I want to be clear with everyone, but it's the only way financially that we can support this in the long term. After that, conferences. So CTMS is doing conferences differently this year. They will be reaching out to students who are in need of a conference, either because of academic concerns or social concerns. But for other parents, if you do want a conference for your child, you are welcome to reach out. The teachers have time designated. I don't know the exact logistics of it, but that does not mean that there will not be conferences. The other piece is at Round Valley and PMG. We have conferences actually the week of the election. It's teacher convention week, so there's no school that Thursday and Friday or that Tuesday for students, but there's conferences those 3 days, and I think information will be coming out soon if it hasn't already for the conferences. The next is the ROD grant. Again, Mr. Blanchard spoke about the high impact tutoring grant. We were supposed to get the answer to that grant on October 6th, I believe. Yeah. Okay. The 13th, okay, so they're only a little late, I suppose. So we have not yet received the answer to that grant. Again, locus of control. The ROD grants, we found out we received all of our Tier 1 grants. That is for HVAC, HVAC controls, and some other concerns to our facilities and systems. There is a huge supply chain issue still in air conditioning and HVAC. And so one of our projects that we're very excited about, and I don't know if I've told Mrs. Goad this yet, was that we're going to be putting AC in the common room and in the common room and in the cafeteria, in the gymnasium at PMG. It's one of the last places in the district that does not have central air. My hope was we were able to do it this summer. We are not able to do it this summer. The way the ROD grant works with the timeline and everything, basically the architects and the state have both told us, so I will apologize personally to Mr. Annan because I got him all excited about it. But again, it's millions of dollars that we applied to and received from the state, so it's a benefit to the district. We've had our week of respect. We speak to our children about, you know, being kind, treating one another fairly. There's different activities in different buildings focusing on that. We also, this past Monday, had our professional development day. It was something new that we've never done before. It was all of the sending districts went to North Hunterdon and to Voorhees. There were about 835, I think, educators altogether that were part of the day. And I want to give a shout out to Joanne Filas, Nicole Panos, Jill Jordan, Rhonda Ferry, Laura Greenstein, and Mrs. Petroselli for and all of their work helping to facilitate and make that happen. I also want to give a shout out to Tara Cantagallo. You heard from our student representatives about the Kids Night Out, the fundraiser. I heard it was a wonderful event, and I know when my kids were a bit younger, I used to love Kids Night Out, where I could drop them off, know they're safe for a couple hours, and have a chance to be an adult. I also want to say our strategic planning, which was spoken about, has gotten underway. I want to say thank you to our strategic planning leads. We're trying something a bit different in the district, where teachers are taking ownership of where they want this district to go. And so I want to say an incredible thank you to Kelly Hill, Julie Tepper, Amanda Wayne, Danielle Nugent, and Rhonda Ferry for leading the different goals. I have shared in the past on the website where they are. And I just want to say thank you to all of our teachers. October is when the instruction really hits. So thank you for helping our kids grow, for teaching them academically, and for moving our district ahead. That's it.
Thank you, Dr. Steger. I'm looking for a motion for 24SU004 through 24SU008.
Motion.
Oh, I know I heard Ms. Kaltenbach. Wait, I gotta find it. Ms. Kaltenbach. Looking for a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Blumenfeld. Questions, discussion? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Dr. Blumenfeld?
Yes.
Ms. Creighton?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Ms. Oliver?
Yes.
Mr. Rosa?
Yes.
Dr. Iamaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. At this time, we've reached the first public comment section. We've received zero written comments today. If anyone in the audience would like to address the board, please come up to the podium. There is a clipboard for all participants to write their name and address. When it is your turn, please also state your name and address for the audio recording. Each person will have up to 3 minutes to speak. At the 2 minute and 30 second mark, the timer will sound. Please wrap your comments up in the following 30 seconds. Public comment is not for back and forth. If there is a response to public comment, it will occur once everyone has had the opportunity to address the board. The board respects all who get up to speak. Please keep comments respectful. This comment section will be limited to 20 minutes.
Melissa Donovan, 11 Highfields Road, Clinton. I received a voicemail this afternoon from Dr. Steger. She said, unfortunately, there are times in our life when things are out of our control. Yes, there have been times when this statement is true in my life, but I do not believe that this is one of them, and I am not understanding of it, and I am not patient about it. That's where you're wrong. My child's safety is on the line. My child's mental health is on the line. My child's education is on the line. To you, Dr. Steger, perhaps this is just a bus issue. To me, it is my daughter won't go to bed issue. It's her stomach hurting because she's worrying about being late to school every day, Dr. Steger. It is that she is crying and begging me to drive her so she doesn't have to be on a bus when I already have to be in two places at once at the same time issue. So Dr. Steger, I will plead with you yet again to take the time to review the bus routes. I have never asked for more buses. All I ask is that as a district, you do your due diligence, and quite frankly, at this time, I find you neglectful. Let's not forget that only last year, a bus driving our students got into an accident carrying Round Valley students. Bus 6 drives 47 students to school every day. The driver herself this morning stated to me that she has a hard time safely doing her job under the current conditions. I stand here warning you that there will be something that happens on this bus route if you continue to be neglectful of my concerns. Safety is not something to ignore. Lawsuits happen this way. According to a United Educators study, bus crashes amount to 16% of the total number of public school claims, costing more than $7 million in losses. You don't seem to take me seriously. My first priority is my children, and right now, they don't seem to be yours. As per policy 8600, you are the person in charge of the bus routes ultimately. I am asking you for time, planning, and collaboration to look at the routes and make changes. I ask for something that can very much occur with a computer, paper, and a pen. Have you even taken the time to look at the bus routes, Dr. Steger? I still want real answers to why my daughter is the first one picked up at 7:55 a.m. and the last one jumped off at 4:20 or later with information that was given to me earlier. I see no compromise on your end, no working with me. I see you stuck in the mud telling me I won't, I can't. Well, I won't stand for it, Dr. Steger. You are in charge of this district. You will have to make uncomfortable conversations. Do you want to have to call a parent because there was an accident on a bus or worse? You are not taking my concern seriously. Have you reviewed the videotapes as per policy 8690 that are supposedly on the bus? Have you seen the disruption that causes distractions to the bus driver? How can you sit here and say nothing can be done if you haven't done those things? I will continue to advocate for my daughter's safety, mental health, and education as long as she is in school. When you start taking your job as superintendent seriously and acknowledge that this is a big problem that has a resolution, if you choose to argue with the people who won't change it, instead of spending that energy arguing with me that nothing can be done, I am disgusted with the leadership of this district, and regrettably, I have 11 more years to deal with it. Here is a petition.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, but your time is... That's fine, we can share. Additional comments? Okay, I'm going to close the floor to public comment. Now we will move on to the report of the business administrator, Dr. Dempsey.
Thank you, Ms. Brennan. There are two actions to be voted upon: the approval of the Board of Ed minutes from the regular meeting on the 11th and the special meeting we had on September 28th, as well as an acceptance of the preliminary eligible costs for the three ROD grants that were considered level one.
Thank you. I'm looking for a motion for 24BA012 and 24BA013. Is that correct? Yes.
Motion.
Thank you, Dr. Miyamaki. Looking for a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Kaltenbach. Any questions? Discussion? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Dr. Blumenfeld?
Yes.
Ms. Creighton?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Ms. Oliver?
Yes.
Mr. Rosa?
Yes.
Dr. Miyamaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Now we will move on to Facilities and Finance with Dr. Blumenfeld.
Good evening, everyone. Ms. Brennan, Mr. Rosa, and I, along with Dr. Steger and Dr. Dempsey, met on October 12th at 12:30 p.m. A virtual meeting lasted about an hour and 45 minutes. Our next committee meeting is scheduled for December 7th at 12:30. And it's a mixed bag from the committee. The first item was really, really good. Our first item on the agenda was a presentation from Brown & Brown, and they're our insurance broker. So as a reminder to everyone, Brown & Brown has a fiduciary duty to the district in helping us navigate complexities of health insurance. The take-home message is that they're still very happy with the decision we made to move from the school employees' health benefit plan to the school's health insurance fund. And they calculated that we'd saved approximately $134,000 from November of 22 through June of 23, and that our rates are expected to be much more stable going forward. Brown & Brown also provided an overview of some new medical technologies, and they also gave a summary of CTSD's recent spending, showing that our ratio of premiums to expenditures is in a great place. So overall, we're in a good position regarding current insurance plan, with a plan that's good for both the district and the employees. We also reviewed some general financial items. We reviewed some of the updated information on the preschool, making sure that we're ready for that. We reviewed over-under, showing unplanned costs versus things that we thought we'd have to spend for, but we won't have to spend for, and that's currently balanced, which is where we want to be. We also reviewed the implementation of a no-cost method of fraud prevention called Positive Pay, which Dr. Dempsey's been working on. We did receive a presentation from Bill Bannister from our architects, and they went through and they did what's called a condition assessment in early March, April. In July, they put together a high-level summary called a capital improvement plan, and they presented us with their highest priority list. These are the projects that they thought were most important for the district to tackle from a facility standpoint. They expressed significant concern over a significant portion of some of the infrastructure, including roofs, parking lots, HVAC control systems, and boilers. And the list included a ballpark cost that are much higher than our capital reserves currently are. So our capital reserves are on the order of, you know, $3 million. But if I take the low estimate of each of the priority projects that they presented and add them up, it was over $50 million in projects. So we discussed some mechanisms of funding those capital projects in the most cost-effective manner. And they recommended things like debt service aid, which was the mechanism we used to fund last year's HVAC improvements. So, you know, we are doing the best we can there. In the general facilities portion of the meeting, we had a long discussion on basically how big the facilities challenges currently are, as highlighted by the condition assessment. Roofs in particular were discussed. There are currently active leaks in several places, leading to water damage in some buildings. And as a result of that water damage, we have had air quality measurements taken. Measurements are being followed up on by the administration. We discussed the importance of preventative maintenance to ensure that some of the community's, you know, biggest assets, the buildings, are taken care of. And I'm sure we're going to have further discussions to make sure that there's proper accountability in place. Finally, the committee reviewed the facilities and finance resolutions on tonight's agenda, 24FF19 through 25. And that ends my report. Would anybody else on the committee like to elaborate further on any of the points or any questions from board members?
Sure. Thank you.
I just have one question. With respect to the air quality sampling, you said we did take them, we just don't have the results back as yet?
We have some of the results back, I believe, Dr. Dempsey, and we're following up on them.
The air quality report.
Yes, go. We have followed up on everything that we had from the company and have taken the remediative measures that were recommended with plans to have them come back in a couple of months to take new readings, just to be sure we've addressed the concerns that were brought to us.
Thank you, Dr. Blumenfeld. I am looking for a motion for 24FF019 through 24FF025.
Motion.
Thank you, Mr. Rosa. Looking for a second? Oh, thank you, Ms. Creighton. Questions, discussion? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Dr. Blumenfeld?
Yes.
Ms. Creighton?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Ms. Oliver?
Yes.
Mr. Rosa?
Yes.
Dr. Riamaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Now we'll move on to personnel with Mr. Hornick.
Good evening. The Personnel Committee met on Wednesday, October 11th at 5:30 for about an hour. In attendance were Dr. Steger, Ms. Creighton, Ms. Emery, Ms. Brennan, and myself. During the meeting, we had discussions regarding a number of different personnel issues, how administration was handling things, how they're looking at handling things, and planning for different concerns as they come up. We had an in-depth conversation regarding staffing at the preschool, pending approval from the state and the ability to move forward, which we'll see on the agenda tonight, some preschool teachers that we are hoping to have approved pending approval of the state saying that we can actually do this. We also had just discussions on the different challenges the district is facing. We need more aides at the school, as a lot of other places do as well, and administration is hard working on this and trying to find ways and talking to us about how they want to move forward. We reviewed all the items on the agenda tonight. We have the retirement of a world language teacher, some resignations that we have to, hate to say approve, but approve, We have appointments for leave replacements, a speech therapist. Again, the preschool teachers, if the state would like to get back to us on that. We also have a request to approve a mentoring teacher, movement across the guides from teachers who've completed more education or done different trainings, club advisors and chaperones for girls basketball, an assistant coach. We have ski club, we have compensation. As you'll see, lots of different presentations. It's great to see all the people here in the district doing so many different things, trainings, assistance, all kinds of wonderful opportunities to help others. We also have some new substitute teachers and teaching assistants on the agenda, and a substitute nurse. Our next scheduled meeting is on December 6th. That's all I have, unless anybody else has anything to add.
Thank you, Mr. Hornick. I am looking for a motion for 24P029 through 24P039. Oh, thank you, Ms. Creighton. Looking for a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Iamaki. Questions or concerns?
I just want to say we will recognize our retirees, but thank you to Carrie Moore for all she's done. We're glad to have her for the rest of this year, and sad she'll be leaving us at the end of the year, but hope she enjoys retirement.
Thank you. Okay, roll call vote, please.
Dr. Blumenfeld?
Yes.
Ms. Creighton?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Ms. Oliver?
Yes.
Mr. Rosa?
Yes.
Dr. Iamaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Now we'll move on to policy with Ms. Kaltenbach.
Good evening. The policy committee met Thursday, October 3rd for about 1.5 hours. Dr. Sager, Ms. Oliver, Ms. Creighton, and myself were in attendance. There are several policies and regulations that are presented for first reading tonight. Some of these are existing policies that have minor adjustments or clarification. Any changes to existing policies or regulations must be voted on and approved by a majority of the board. There are no new policies tonight. As a board, we are also reviewing older policies that don't need changes, but we want to ensure that our policies still meet our needs. The new reviewed date, even without changes, will be reflected on our CTSD website along with the rest of our policies. The committee would ask the full board to consider voting in the affirmative for the following. Action item 24PR006, these are the items for first reading. Policy 0164, conduct of board meeting. This policy changes includes minor wording, now contains our actual board schedule and aligns with the best practices. Regulation 7510, use of school facilities. This is mandatory, but it's not new. And the changes were just updates to clarify the wording. Policy 5112, entrance age. These are changes to bring us into alignment with best practices and include some modification of wording for clarification. The above will be up for second reading at the December 11th board meeting, and if approved, these policies will then become part of the official policies of the district. The committee is also bringing several policies for second reading tonight. These are listed in the agenda. They were discussed at the last meeting and voted on for first reading. If the full board approves the second reading, these will then become part of the official policies, and the committee asks that the board consider voting in the affirmative. Action item 24PR008, these are our reviewed policies. These are not policies that have changes. These are just ones that we as a committee have reviewed to ensure that they do what we want them to do. Policy 0164.3, agenda preparation. Policy 0174, legal services. And policy 2468, independent educational evaluations. These have all been reviewed by the committee and the administration, and we ask the board to accept the review date policy. The review date modification to the policy, sorry. Our next committee meeting will be on November 28th. Does anyone on the committee have anything to add?
We did end up tabling one of the new policies. It was the one on the board agenda because of governance. We're tabling
but
it.
But I didn't say that one.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Right? Okay. So like I thought I pulled that one off.
Okay, any questions? Looking for a motion Actually, we have to correct the numbers. It's 24PR007 through 24PR009, correct, Dr. Dempsey?
Yes, we used PR006 last month.
Yes, so they will be adjusted to each one, just moving down one.
Sorry.
Okay. Do you still motion, Mr. Horn? Thank you. Looking for a second? Is that Ms. Emery? Thank you. Any questions? Discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Dr. Blumenfeld?
Yes.
Ms. Creighton?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Ms. Oliver?
Yes.
Mr. Rosa?
Yes.
Dr. Rehamaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Now we'll move on to curriculum with Dr. Rehamaki.
Thank you. This month, the curriculum committee met for 85 minutes on October 12th. In attendance were Dr. Steger, Mr. Blanchard, Ms. Kaltenbach, Mr. Hornick, Ms. Brennan, and myself. This month, we have 13 actions, including our regular approval of travel expenditures and curriculum-related services. I want to draw attention to the ELA professional development in the first motion for several of our teachers, as noted by Wilson and foundations in the program titles. We also have an amended approval of one practicum request and full approval of another one, approval of an out-of-district placement for a student, approval of our nursing services plan, approval of curriculum content for acting, approval of a site visit for an RVCC faculty member to observe our district's practices, approval of the book New Kid, which will be used in some upcoming lessons at CTMS, approval of transportation for upcoming field trips, and finally, three motions to approve initiatives for the non-public schools in Clinton Township. As noted last month, public schools serve as financial pass-through entities of state monies for private schools. These motions reflect approval of passing on those monies to the appropriate schools. We had to update a few numbers, including the ESEA numbers in the last action item, because the numbers from the state changed. At our meeting, we also discussed deep dives that Mr. Blanchard and his department have made into our student achievement data and how we might raise that achievement. Part of the focus was on the NJSLA performance presentation and where those data indicate need. As part of that discussion, he also provided comparison data for comparable districts in the area, such as Clinton Glen Gardner and Bridgewater. He also shared a schedule analysis of each grade, showing how much time is being spent on different subjects and where rebalancing might be needed. And finally, he shared sample iReady diagnostic reports, which we used to discuss how these might be shared with parents in the future. We discussed a few other small items, including updates on staff professional development, updates on the CUSAC process, and requests to update the PowerSchool interface to make some of the information a little easier to find. Our next meeting is December 7th. Does anyone on the committee want to add or amend anything?
I would just like to add that I did actually read New Kid this weekend. The discussion.
Can we should save discussion after the motions. So, if that's okay.
Okay.
So.
I thought it was a comment, but okay.
Just a point of order.
Okay.
Okay, so good. Thank you, Dr. Rehamaki. I am looking for a motion for 24CUR035 through 24CURs. Oh, actually, we have the amended addendum. How does that work? Since we haven't motioned, can we add that in now? Okay.
No one's motion.
There's an addendum.
The addendum is to clarify language that was in one of the policies that passed that had to do with reasonable and customary rates.
So what you're saying is I have to read this?
Maybe.
Okay. So this is action item 24CUR048, approval of reasonable and customary rates for independent educational evaluation, IEE. Whereas Clinton Township School District Policy 2468 indicates that the maximum allowable cost for an independent evaluation will be limited to the reasonable and customary rate as determined and approved by the board annually, and whereas these rates have not yet been determined for the 2023-2024 school year, Now therefore be it resolved, the Clinton Township Board of Education approves the following reasonable and customary rates for independent educational evaluation, IEE, for the 2023 to 2024 school year. Okay, so the evaluations, educational evaluations rate $1,000, psychiatric evaluation $900, psychological evaluation $1,000, neurodevelopmental $900, neurodevelopmental reevaluation $550, speech evaluation $1,000, occupational therapy evaluation $1,000, physical therapy evaluation $1,000, bilingual evaluation $550, functional behavior assessment $1,200, medical examination $500.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Okay, so now I'm looking for a motion for 24 CUR 035 through 24 CUR 048.
Motion.
Thank you, Ms. Emery. Looking for a second.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Hornick. Questions or discussion, Ms. Kalmbach?
Sure. As a member of the committee, we had discussed adding the book New Kid by Jerry Craft, and it piqued my interest. The teachers wanted to add it. There had to be a reason, and so I read the book, and I see the reason. It's a very good book. In fact, I'm going to encourage my son to read that as his next book. It's a really nice story, but it talks a lot about empathy and kind of being, obviously, the new kid and fitting in and all of those things that our kids struggle with. And so I think it's going to be a great addition to our curriculum. So I was very happy that I got to read it.
I cut you off because I was going to say the same thing, and then it was going to spiral out of control. So I did the same thing. I read the book, and I thought it was amazing. And I thought it really highlighted that every kid has something going on, and you never know, and to have empathy for that experience. So I also am going to recommend it to my child.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussion?
Actually, could you say a little bit more about 24 CUR 039? This is the out-of-district placement. Is there anything else you can add to that? That one just to North 100 and Voorhees?
This is the placement at North.
Is it lion or tiger? So North 100 and Voorhees has a Lion Pride Academy. I'm laughing because I said tiger last time and everybody corrected me. So a Lion Pride Academy. And it is something that they have for students who are having a hard time with school for a variety of reasons. And through our partnership that we've been building with North 100, some of our 7th and 8th graders who might qualify for it, rather than putting them out of district placement and that before they go to the high school is taking them a little early. And because it benefits them and our students, that's why it's only a dollar. So.
Fantastic. Sounds like a great program.
No other comments? I'm not saying there are none. It's just I don't see any other comments. Roll call vote, please.
Dr. Blumenfeld?
Yes.
Ms. Creighton?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Ms. Oliver?
Yes.
Mr. Rosa?
Yes.
Dr. Riyamaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. And now it's time for old business of the board. Is there any old business of the board anyone would like to bring up? Okay, new business of the board. Is there any new business of the board that anyone would like to bring up? Okay, now we have, this time we've reached the second public comment section. If anyone in the audience would like to address the board, please come up to the podium. There's a clipboard for all the participants to write their name and address. When it is your turn, please also state your name and address for the audio recording. Each person will have up to 3 minutes to speak. At the 2 minute and 30 second mark, the timer will sound. Please wrap your comments up in the following 30 seconds. Public comment is not for back and forth. If there is a response to public comments, it will occur once everyone has had the opportunity to address the board. Seeing none, we are going to close the floor to the second public comment section. Our next regular meeting is scheduled for December 11th at 7 p.m. here at the Clinton Township Middle School. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. I'm looking for a motion to approve the above executive session resolution for the board moving into closed session to discuss HIB investigations and legal matters, wherein the length of time for the executive session is expected to be approximately 30 minutes, and upon returning, action may be taken.
Motion.
Thank you, Dr. Riyamaki. Second? Thank you, Dr. Blumenfeld. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The time is 8:44 p.m. Thank you. Looking for a motion to reconvene public second session?
Motion.
Thank you, Dr. Riamaki. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Hornick. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The time is 9:17 p.m. Sorry. I'm looking for a motion for 24SU-009.
Motion.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Emery. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Blumenfeld. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
I abstain.
And I abstain.
We got two. Thank you. I am now looking for a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Thank you, Ms. Emery. Second? Thank you, Ms. Kaltenbach. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The time is 9:18. Have a good evening.